Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I gotta say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I just, for me, I always, on television, watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton?
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.
And welcome into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode, Marquise Munson, taking you through this Wednesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. Fellas, Joe, what's going on?
Not much. Though today I got to say, happy birthday to my son, Jack. 16 years old.
Oh, that's a big one.
Passed his driver's test the other day. So we got another driver in the house. It's big.
Very nice.
I mean, happy birthday. Happy for you, kid. Good job. Love you, but got another driver in the house.
Now you can take your place, your own self places.
I'm glad that's the first thing you went to. He's like, he's 16. He can drive. So, we have a new driver in the house, so I don't have to do everything. So
when life returns to normal and everybody has a bunch of practices and stuff now, man, imagine the possibilities. It's exciting.
Now, are you one of those dads like I anticipate that I'm going to be where, like, I fully believe I'm the only person on the planet that knows how to drive, so I'm totally nervous for everybody else that I love driving?
Well, yeah, actually, I'm terrible. I got in two accidents in high school as a passenger, actually with the same buddy. So really, he was a terrible driver. But
yes.
Honestly, since I went for a few years, I couldn't be in a car as a passenger. And I still, like on family trips, it could be a 20-hour drive. I'm doing 20 hours. My wife is a good driver. I still drive every last second. So, yeah, when I'm around, I'll be driving the car. But I'm okay with him driving when I'm not around.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay. That's good. I think that's a healthy way to approach this situation. I'm a very similar mind. Like, we're going on a trip in a couple weeks, and when I go, like, I'm driving the whole way. I'm in control,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, control thing. And then the whole – I mean, it's not really a factor anymore because we can – just punch it up on the phones, but the whole, got lost, but no, I'm going to figure it out. I mean, that's, I've been there too. Sort of like, oh yeah, no, I know where we're going. We don't need to ask anybody.
We don't need
we're
to ask. What did you guys do on Tuesday night? What was your Tuesday night like? Munson, we'll start with you.
I watched the Dodgers beat the Houston Astros. That's what I did on my Tuesday night.
Dodgers didn't do a very good job of social distancing last night. Wasn't great.
No, they did not. But they did do a good job at getting 5 runs and only allowing 2. Now, that Walker Buehler home run, that got me a little nervous. I was like, oh, man, Walker Buehler, come on, man. Like, I got faith in you because I'm a big component of, like, I think Walker Buehler is going to be Zach Greinke and what he was. But the only problem with being Zach Greinke is Zach Greinke left because he didn't want to be second to Kershaw. And so we lost Zach Greinke because of that. I don't want to lose Walker Buehler. I love Walker Buehler. I think he is the future of the Dodgers bullpen, in my opinion.
We're going to talk this much about the Dodgers, not talk about Joe Kelly, the all-time greatest Dodger in history?
In history.
No, he's not. Joe Kelly is awful. I'm going to just
Dodgers. You don't like him now?
Not even now?
Dodgers fans, listen to me.
Oh, man.
Listen to me for a second. Joe Kelly is not a hero, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, what he did was funny, and it was petty, which are two things that I love in a person, is being petty and being funny. And he did both in one inning. And I like that. That's cool. But let's not make him out to be a hero, because let's not forget, Joe Kelly was on a Boston Red Sox team who also beat the Dodgers in the World Series, and they cheated too.
Allegedly.
So,
first of all, okay.
Well, let's not praise Joe Kelly and give him a statue outside of Dodger Stadium. Let's just not do that.
For people who don't know, Joe Kelly threw at Bregman,
yes,
threw at Correa,
yep,
then struck out Correa, and we've got a new gif in the world because of that. His little face he made was amazing. I mean, yeah, I retweeted this morning.
It was hilarious because it looked like a child.
I mean, that was good.
And for those of you who awesome. Are brave enough to think about what life was like 5 months ago, that was the biggest story in the world of sports, is the Houston Astros and the cheating scandal and the Dodgers. They don't like the Astros all that well. And you were wondering at what point in the regular season was something like this going to crop back up. Last night, that's
there
when it happened. You got to figure, though, the Dodgers would be the one to do it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously. And even Dusty Baker talked about after the game of, we didn't go through that the last, few games. So, that's kind of on them. My players are fine. Of course your players are fine, because they got a World Series for cheating.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, Dusty Baker. Think about that for a second. Of course your players are okay with people not throwing at them or throwing at them, because guess what? They knew that was going to happen. But it's good that the Dodgers are first. And I'm pretty sure, and I thought it was going to be mostly chirping between Cody Bellinger, because Cody Bellinger was probably the most vocal out of everybody on the Dodgers team. He said, he stole an MVP. They stole a ring from us. And Cody Bellinger, I thought, he had an opportunity because their bases were loaded. He could have hit a grand slam, and then I thought he was going to do a bat flip or something.
Threw his bat in the Astros dugout.
I thought it was perfect setup for Cody Bellinger to be petty, and he didn't get the opportunity. But I did know that somebody was going to throw at a Houston Astro. I knew it wasn't going to be Walker Buehler, because Walker Buehler is way too valuable, and he's way too nice of a guy to really do stuff like that. I can't see Walker Buehler throwing at a person. I can't. All he does.
Munson, that Joe Kelly guy's a jerk, though. I knew he was going to be the one.
As soon as Joe Kelly went out there, I was like, oh boy, here we go. Here's where it gets started. I have to think about who in this bullpen is going to hit an Astro. And if you were to line them up in a police lineup of, these are all your Dodgers bullpen pitchers, which one is going to throw?
Who's most likely?
Who's most likely? I'm going to be like, man, give me that that little skinny dude with the glasses right there. That guy. Put him on the mound, because I'm pretty sure he's going to be the one to do it. And he did. And it was funny.
He did it style.
Even though this is the new norm for fighting during a pandemic is, we're just going to argue from a distance, which is fine.
At some point, they're going to totally break social distancing, right?
And maybe, it's
maybe
happen
in this series.
Well, wasn't there a fight last night in hockey? So it's just,
But they're on a bubble.
It's different.
They're not really distancing all that much in hockey when you're hitting each other.
Again, if you're going to play the sports, I understand you want to take away all the different possibilities, but if you're going to play the sports, you're going to have stuff like that, too.
It was funny seeing Dusty Baker argue with the umpires with mask on.
Oh, gosh.
They're just all arguing it's three umpires and
that's
then him.
Lip reading is gone.
That's
man.
Been my favorite part about the mask situation in baseball is, I think the Pirates manager got tossed the other day and was going out to argue, and then stopped, went back down the stairs to the dugout, got his mask, pulled it out. The umpire was walking towards the dugout. He pulls his mask out too, and they're just in each other's face. You can't even understand the words going on.
It's funny because he basically pulled what you do at a grocery store. It's just I forgot my mask. Hold on.
Yeah,
Before we argue,
I'll be right back.
let me go get my mask real quick. But it's a pandemic, so we can't be fighting, I guess. But it sucks because I wanted to see Bregman get punched in the face. But that's just me.
That'll probably happen at some point.
It's good to know that Munson's hatred for Alex Bregman has not subsided over the course of the past.
See, I can't really hate Jose Altuve because he's short. So it's just he's already got his punishment by being short.
Wow.
So there you go. He's a short guy.
Got to rip on the short people.
Hey,
man. Poor Jose.
Poor Jose.
Altuve.
But they deserve it, man. You know, they deserve everything they get. But they're not. I just think people are so worried about the pandemic now. There's just like they kind of let the Astros slide a little bit.
But yeah, but now it's back. I mean, I'm glad to see that it's back. People haven't totally forgotten.
I can't wait to. Oh, they finally woke up the MLB. Like all the teams are now standing up. Like, oh yeah, we're supposed to be.
Wait a minute,
we're supposed to be hitting these guys. But I don't agree with Joe Kelly like throwing at heads. Like that's not cool. Like I don't care in any situation and what they did. Like I don't throwing at people's head is uncalled for. Like,
hit him in the back. It'd be fine.
Hit him in the back. I don't care. It's kind of hard to hit Jose Altuve in the back because he's
so
short.
He goes again.
But you know, it's
you're getting all the shots in.
I know. Shots fired. But don't throw at heads. That's the one thing. Like
and both of those were right. Basically, I mean,
I don't know.
Bregman was a little lower, I guess. But
it was confusing. It was confusing watching the game because it's like, is Joe Kelly just that bad, or is he, or is he like really aiming for people's heads in this game?
I think
it was a little bit of both. I think it was like I'm gonna try to hit this guy. But I suck so bad that it's probably going to go over their head. So that's pretty much what happened. Joe Kelly was awful. And that's why I'm not going to label him a hero. Because I don't ever want to see him on the mound again. His pitches were awful. I don't think he had one pitch that I was like, pretty good by Joe Kelly.
Pretty good slider to strike out Correa.
Yeah.
Munson
is a hard guy to impress. Yeah. Have you noticed that?
No.
Dusty Baker, did you see what Dusty Baker said? That he said then that – Kelly said, "Nice swing, bleep to Correa," along with doing the little, you know, second grader, you know, taunting thing. So he got a lot out of mileage out of that mound appearance, man.
Sure did. Good for Joe.
You may not like him, but he's an American hero now.
Yeah,
so.
I guess so. But look, he still can't pitch to save his life, and I still don't want him. He's good. He's okay. He's not that bad. But I'm just saying, like last night, he was awful, and I was like, please get him off the mound. Let's just get out of this inning. And they almost pulled him too. And I was like, I think they're not pulling him for a reason.
Right.
It's because they want him to be the one to peg one of these guys, which he was not on the team when this all happened. Anyway, and that's the moral of the thing. He's a cheater,
allegedly,
and he also wasn't on the team. But hey, keep that same
hockey
energy. Teams
I like have
it.
To have a goon. I mean, Joe Kelly.
If Joe Kelly is a representation of the Dodgers as a goon, then we need to step our game up in L.A. We need to get like Puig back or somebody. Somebody a little bit more intimidating than Joe Kelly, because him and his glasses and his just weird look, like he just looks no. He's scruffy. That's not our goon. We need somebody else. Let's get Yasiel Puig back. Sleeveless Yasiel Puig.
Where is he, bud? Is he just out there?
Last I checked, he was signed with the Braves, wasn't he?
Well, right, but then that fell through.
Well, I don't know if it did.
Oh, it didn't? I thought it did fall through.
I don't think it did.
I've been spending too much time reading about Magic City Wings. I don't have to
saw that. It was a great story, by the way, on The Athletic.
Man.
It was.
Every
word of it was great. If you didn't see it yesterday, the Miami Marlins, I believe they're suspended, or they're not playing through the weekend. So through Sunday, the Marlins will not be playing. The total number of cases in the organization, last time I looked, up to 17. So big problem with the Miami Marlins.
And other teams have been affected, so now the Yankees are playing somebody different, right?
Right.
They've switched all this stuff
All
up.
These things.
I think they're playing the Orioles or –
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think they're playing the Baltimore Orioles. So it all worked out.
Now, the good news was the test came back for the Phillies yesterday, and all were negative.
Yeah.
And that's what you were worried about, is they were playing against the Phillies. Did they transmit the virus over there? And the great news is that apparently did not happen. So MLB probably couldn't have hoped for more in that part of this discussion, but certainly not good news for the Marlins that they're postponed through the weekend.
Yeah, and look, the Marlins – I'm not going to say the Marlins deserve anything. We're talking about a deadly disease, but their behavior was so stupid and can never happen again. That's incredible that they would even think to – well, it's not incredible they would think to do it, because that's what people are going to do.
Right.
You can't ever let people decide.
They shouldn't have had
that
decision power.
Not at all.
When we come back, the Titans had some big news come out yesterday in Zoom availabilities with Mike Vrabel. We'll get into a little bit of that. When we come back, this is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Titans head coach Mike Vrabel yesterday on his Zoom availability with the local media. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode. And Joe, you were on that Zoom yesterday. You know, we were talking on the show, the Patriots had this laundry list of players that opted out. Even after we got off the air yesterday, Patrick Chung opted out with the Patriots as well. So I think their number was up to like five or six players already who have chosen to opt out. We were kind of wondering how prevalent this was going to be throughout the league, and specifically with the Titans. So far with the Titans, only one player, as Vrabel mentioned there, undrafted rookie Anthony McKinney, an offensive lineman, has chosen to opt out for the 2020 season. But there was another piece of news yesterday regarding their first-round pick, Isaiah Wilson, was placed on the team's reserve / COVID-19 list. So that was kind of the biggest part of the news I saw yesterday in terms of opt-outs or our guys not being ready to go at this point on a COVID-19 list.
Yeah, so Titans had some news and really not great news.
No.
I mean, Isaiah Wilson, and there's no clarification on
exactly what it is.
Whenever someone goes on that list, that can mean they tested positive. That can also mean that they were around someone who did.
Right.
But, you know, essentially with Isaiah Wilson, I mean, the next couple weeks here are going to be testing and study time and some working out. I think Vrabel said August 14th might be the day where they really start doing some stuff. So he should be fine for the start of football. Of course, obviously, as long as he's fine and he gets the, you know, heals up and clears up and, you know, is healthy. But I think of all the things that happened yesterday, Vic Beasley as a do not report is – that's, to me, the alarm there that you set off, because I don't know exactly what it means yet, but if it does mean that Vic Beasley might opt out, think about that from the Titans. That's the weakest point of this team, is why they signed Vic Beasley to a 1-year, $9.5 million deal, is to get after the passer. So if he opts out now, you already, I think, needed to go after Jadeveon Clowney. I think it's pretty obvious in general in the NFL that Jadeveon Clowney has a price tag that everybody in the NFL is like, yeah, no, man.
Right.
I'm not going there. And the Titans, I'm confident in saying this through various conversations in reporting on this, that the Titans are not, like, unless something changes, and maybe this is it, but they're not coming to work. Clowney wants the number. I mean, he would have been signed. You know, a lot of teams, I think, would have signed him. Other teams have made offers that have been reported. He thinks more of himself, and he thinks at some point it's going to happen. The problem for the Titans now is if you lose Beasley, first of all, now you have more of a need for Clowney.
Sure.
And Clowney knows you have more of a need for Clowney. So even though you might have, it might be more urgent to get him, it also might be harder to get him now.
Yeah, I was kind of floored when I saw that yesterday. And again, we don't really know what it means for Vic Beasley at this point, but certainly not good news. Another two pieces of news yesterday, Jayon Brown and Corey Davis on the PUP list. And that we had a conversation yesterday about Corey Davis and what a big year this is for him. Not a huge deal, I guess, right now, but this seems to be kind of a trend with Corey Davis every year, especially around the start of training camp. He's always kind of dealing with something. And that can't happen for him this year.
Yeah, it just – I mean, look, off seasons are – I guess this feels like a way different off season because they didn't have the spring. But, you know, I mean, regardless, you've got a certain amount of time, and obviously you hope everybody comes back healthy. And we don't know the details on that yet, but that's two guys. I mean, Jayon Brown is a huge player for this team.
Yeah.
He had the shoulder last year. He missed the Baltimore game. He re-aggravated it at New England, missed the Baltimore game. David Long came in and did an unbelievable job. And then Jayon gave it a go in Kansas City. But that's not great that he's on the PUP. And then, yeah, like you said, Davis has had a bunch of things. Two huge guys they're counting on. I mean, look at both of those positions. Middle linebacker doesn't have Wesley Woodyard anymore. So, again, long, really nice rookie year late he came on, but your depth there is not great in the first place. Like a guy like Cale Garrett, undrafted free agent of Missouri, got a chance to make this team.
Yeah.
And then look at receiver. You know, Tajay Sharp is gone. You've got, obviously, Cleve Raymond, great story. Cam Batson's coming back. But you basically, you know, you've got A.J. Brown and Corey Davis and Adam Humphries are your top three. And
right.
So, like, both of those positions already could maybe have used and could use a veteran depth piece, and now both those guys hurt. So, obviously, the Titans need those guys. And so, if you're the Titans, and if you're a Titans fan, you hope that by the time football starts or so, they can be back out there.
Can you think of a reason why, and maybe, look, I'm not talking about like some family reason we don't know about because we're still trying to figure things out with Vic Beasley here, but like outside of opting out, is there a reason you can think of why he wouldn't report? Because I couldn't.
No, I really couldn't. I mean, yeah, like, I mean, basically, obviously that's not, you know, it's been clearly communicated, I'm sure, when you're supposed to show
yes,
up.
I mean, there's a clear date.
You know, you have a flat tire. Like, I don't know. I mean, you could – and if you – if something was going on and you communicated it and you're busy, and this is something I don't know, but, like, let's say, oh, yep, something happened, family thing happened, whatever, would the Titans have reported that he was did not report yesterday?
I don't know.
I mean, like, to me, that is sort of a – that's sort of saying it's an unexcused absence.
Yeah, like, he just didn't show up.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, we should – and I've been trying to get some clarification on this and haven't heard anything, but that's something that I would think would be cleared up relatively quickly.
Well, let's go on and put it out there then. Like, let's say that the nightmare scenario happens for the Titans – and Vic Beasley either just doesn't show up or opts out, whatever the case may be, and then they're not able to sign. Somebody else comes in and signs Jadeveon Clowney. What do you do at that point from a pass rush perspective? Because we all know it. We look at their roster right now, even with Vic Beasley and the risks that he is, there's still a lot left to be desired, I think, from a pass rushing standpoint with the Titans. What do you do if Beasley opts out or whatever the case is, isn't here, and you can't get Clowney?
Right. No, I mean, there's a lot of things. You look at this. Jarrell Casey got salary dumped to Denver. And this is not the same position, but it's part of your pass rush. So you've lost that. You obviously have great confidence that Jeffrey Simmons is going to be a high-impact player this year. And I think he will be if he's healthy. Actually, he tweeted out something, or maybe sometimes it's like on Instagram, and
yeah.
It always has to get to Twitter for me to see it. But he looked like he's, you know, he's used his time well in the offseason. So that's good for you. And you have Harold Landry in year three, and you're going to rely heavily on him, and you were anyway. But that's the thing with Beasley, you hope that he could, you know, be something like he was when he led the NFL in sacks in 2016. I know he ended up with, what, 8 last year. He had a few late. He has not been the same player since 2016. But still, you signed him, 1-year deal. You know, that's an important signing for what you have. So now you have Landry. Let's say you have that. You have Landry. You've got Kamale Correa, who's a nice role player who has done some good things. I mean, he had some really good moments in the playoffs. You've got guys like Derek Roberson and Reggie Gilbert, and you've got DeAndre Walker, the rookie from Georgia, who was hurt last year.
Yep.
I mean, that's a huge – I think that's a big story anyway. Can he come in and make an impact? But, I mean, you look at the list of guys, and basically it's a lot of role players. You're mixing and matching, and you are very much lacking, until we see something different, high-impact players there. So now you're in a position of like what Dean Pease did a lot last year as defensive coordinator. He unleashed some exotic and really fun-to-watch blitzes and disguised them. And Logan Ryan also, by the way, was probably the best blitzer of the group.
You also lost your best blitzer.
Yeah, I mean, and now you've got this know, Dean Pease is gone, and so now it's Vrabel, and I asked him about that, and we'll get into that later too, but, you know, how exactly they're going to do everything with play calling and leading the defense. I mean, there's a whole list of things here that gets affected negatively if Vic Beasley doesn't show up.
Yeah, and, like, I don't want to overreact because we don't really know what's going on with Vic Beasley. He may show up today or tomorrow. Like, we just don't know. But it did get the wheels turning a little bit yesterday of, okay, well, let's say he doesn't show up. The price tag for Clowney, if you're the Titans, just went up because he knows he's got all the leverage now. I mean, you need him at that point. I think you can make a pretty good argument that you need him anyway, but you definitely need him if Vic Beasley's not here. So
yeah, and he knows it.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So maybe the Titans do come to him. I think, you know, I mean, I think the hope has been at some point Clowney looks around and it's like, are you playing or not? Because you're not getting this multi-year, $20 million deal unless you have a year where you light it up.
Right.
So are you going to get paid to play football this year? Because people aren't paying you what you want. But the reason for Clowney to wait is someone's going to have an injury, someone's going to lose a key guy, and then it's going to be like, hey, here I am. You know the price tag, and that's the problem. So, but it'll be – if it happens – it'll be really interesting to see what that means from the Titans side, you know, because there's a case to be made to not sign Clowney. There was before this. I've been definitely in the you need to sign him camp. Now it would be, yep.
For sure.
Get him on the phone. Get his agent on the phone. Mike Vrabel did the classic, like, drop the head.
Oh, yeah.
When my guy John Glennon asked him – the second Clowney question. I think Glennon asked both. Good job, Glennon. I think Glennon asked both Clowney questions, and the second one, Vrabel just dropped his head yesterday. But
I think we may have Glennon on the show tomorrow. I believe that's the plan, so we'll have some fun asking him about that. If you missed it, Mike Vrabel in the Zoom interview, Glennon's asking the question about Clowney, and Vrabel literally, like, drops his head almost on the table in front of him. It's just like, how many times are you guys going to ask me about Jadeveon Clowney? But that's how it works in this business, man.
Two gifts in one day. Two American heroes, Joe Kelly and John Glennon.
Yeah.
Outstanding.
Absolutely. When we come back, we're going to discuss life without Dean Pease. How are the Titans going to adjust to that? Joe Rexrode asked a phenomenal question yesterday.
Beautiful.
To Mike Vrabel. We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Titans head coach Mike Vrabel yesterday talking about life without Dean Pease and what defensive play calling is going to look like this year for the Tennessee Titans. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode. And Joe, I believe it was your beautiful question that sparked that answer out of Vrabel yesterday. What did you make of his response to your question about life without Dean Pease?
That was an excellent question.
It was.
We don't want to be too much like Jared Stillman, though. Like, every time he says something, like, we have to hear it like four times at a press conference. Or especially if someone, like, I think Peter Laviolette one time was like, "Oh, good question, Jared."
Oh, yeah.
He kept like replaying it over and over.
He put it as like the ringback tone on his phone. Yes.
That was a pretty bad Lavi.
We do love Jared.
Lavi impersonation, by the way. Yes, we love Jared. But yeah. There was nothing surprising about Vrabel's response. It was basically just an attempt to be like, you're going to tell us now that you're calling plays? Come on, tell us. And also, like, I didn't have another COVID-19 question to ask by the time it got to me on the Zoom call. I mean, every possible angle of that was asked, which I'm not criticizing those questions being asked. That's the number one question right now. How are you handling it? You know, how does it change things? No preseason games, a lot of different offshoots of the COVID question. But I just wanted to see if maybe he'd be like, since camp is starting, he'd be like, I'm going to call defensive plays. And he's still sticking with, you know, once they start scrimmages, they'll figure it out. I'm sure they have a more focused, detailed, specific plan than they're telling us right now. I think he'll call defensive plays, but Shane Bowen is sort of the outside linebackers coach, Shane Bowen, for people who don't know, is kind of the de facto defensive coordinator when Vrabel's not in the room. So it's going to be interesting. It's a big change from Dean Pease as DC in Vrabel's first two seasons.
Got a text in on the text line from Ben. Says, with the downgrades on defense as well as losing the coordinator, I feel we'll give up another 5 or 6 points a game, and it will either cost us the playoffs or make us lose one of the first couple of playoff games. Joe, I do think there is a popular sentiment out there that the defense, with all the losses we've talked about, with Casey being gone, Logan Ryan being gone, Dean Pease gone, not knowing what the future may hold or not hold for Jadeveon Clowney, I think there's a lot of concern about what this defense could look like once we get things rolling here this season.
Yeah, and again, let's keep it to we don't know what's happening with Vic Beasley.
Sure.
We don't know what's happening with Jadeveon Clowney. There are other pieces coming in. I mean, Christian Fulton, I think, could be a really nice piece for that secondary, which I think could be really good with Adoree Jackson continuing to grow with Malcolm Butler back. Love the safeties, love the inside linebackers, but again, Jayon Brown, you want him healthy. I mean, there's still a lot, I think, to like about the defense, but yeah, if you go through worst case scenario here, I can't disagree. I don't know what the points per game impact is, but it's not a positive change. And I still, let's say all the best case scenario happens. So let's say they, you know, Beasley flat tire gets fixed. You know, he shows up today. Clowney signs, finally says, "Yeah, I'll sign for $11 million. Let's go." And you know, Vrabel ends up just being the best combo head coach DC ever. I still think if you get into a playoff game with like Baltimore again, or if you get a playoff game with Kansas City again, your offense is going to have to go nuts for you to win that game.
Oh, yeah.
But still, can you get a couple more stops in a game like that with a better defense? That's the idea. So still a lot that we don't know, but certainly I think most of the questions about this team are on that side of the ball.
Yeah, and to Dean Pease, I mean, the thing that stood out to me, we all know he's a gifted defensive coordinator, was very creative in terms of the way that he had to operate with this defense, not really having that bona fide pass rusher that you could rely on a week-to-week basis. But he was very creative at his blitz packages. Logan Ryan was used a lot. But Logan Ryan wasn't the only guy that was used a lot. They did a lot of different things on defense with the way they attacked the quarterback. I wonder if Mike Vrabel is the guy that calls plays, or at least is the guy that calls the plays on defense the majority of the time, will it look much different than it did under Dean Pease? Like, what do we think Vrabel's style will be? Because I tend to think there's not going to be a whole lot of change from Dean Pease to Mike Vrabel if Vrabel is the guy calling plays.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I think they have the same philosophy, same system. You know, I'm sure Vrabel will have some exotic looks and blitzes and all that. I mean, it's, you know, what's going to happen is, you know, it's not like Dean Pease's tenure, they were like every week they were unbelievable. And they had some terrible.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's the NFL. I mean, you get your butt kicked no matter who you are from time to time. So it wasn't like this consistent dominance on defense. But, you know, if they have some bad weeks, right or wrong, the conversation is going to be like, why didn't Vrabel hire an experienced defensive coordinator to come in here, take over that defense, and let him still be the head coach? That may not be the problem. If they have problems, I'm just saying, like, everyone get ready, because that's what we're going to be talking about. And look, if the defense is bad, and we don't know the personnel right now, but whatever the case, you know, I think that's a fair thing to ask about. I mean, I think when you go down this road, it's a little bit outside the box. You are opening yourself to questions of why didn't you do the traditional thing here? I think for Vrabel, and we'll see as his career progresses, I think Dean Pease was an absolute essential hire for him early as a first-time head coach. He talked him out of retirement, and it was just like, this is the guy I need. But it may be that Vrabel otherwise wants this. He wants to be, you know, he's a defensive guy. I mean, you talk to anybody like on that staff or even players, and like they believe Vrabel's like an X's and O's genius.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just like a motivator and all that stuff. I mean, he's, you know, people are very impressed who are around him in the film room, like his recall on stuff and all that. I mean, it's so maybe this is just the plan for him and his career. But if it doesn't work, then eventually it's like, nah, you gotta hire a separate DC, you know, just like you have a separate OC.
And remember, Vrabel has been a DC before. I mean, he was the defensive coordinator in Houston, and he was at defensive coordinator when Jadeveon Clowney had a great season in Houston.
Now, they had a terrible season.
They, as a whole, did not play all that well. Now, they had a ton of injuries that year, as well. So it's really hard to hold that against Vrabel at that point. But he does have some experience. But I always go back to the, is it really healthy to have your head coach, especially at the NFL level where you've got to be worried about so many different things? Is it really healthy to have him so focused on one side of the ball that whether you want it to or not, it has to at least somewhat take away from the other side of the ball when you're spending so much time in the defensive room and you're trying to worry about which plays you're going to call in the next series, what looks you're seeing from the other team? Like, it's just got to take away from it at some point, whether you believe it does or not.
Yeah, you would think so. You would definitely think so. And I think, well, in the past, at times, especially like early last year, I think at one point during the really tough stretch to open the season, Vrabel said something to the effect of, and I'm paraphrasing, I could probably go back and try to find the exact quote, but basically that he was spending more time with the offense. Even his first year some, he talked about kind of learning about the running game from an offensive perspective and learning some things in that way. And again, that like those are things that as a head coach you're able to do. Like you said, if you're tied to the defense, it makes it a little harder. Maybe, you know, at this point, maybe he feels just more confident in the whole operation that he feels like he can take some time away. I don't know how it's all going to look. I just know you know that the questions are going to fly if it doesn't work out.
When we come back, we've been talking about Jadeveon Clowney potentially joining the Titans since like April. When is this stuff going to come to an end? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Mike Vrabel's a big fan of these Jadeveon Clowney questions, as you can tell in that exchange with our good friend John Glennon.
Was that the first or second one?
I think that was the second one.
Okay, so that was the head. That was the head drop.
That was the head drop.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I love you.
If
John
you have
Glennon.
Not seen Mike Vrabel drop his head in the middle of that question by our good friend John Glennon, it is one of the greatest things I've ever seen in my life.
Fantastic.
It really is. And props to Glennon, by the way, for just like, he didn't even care. He just kept rolling. He's like, yeah, I know you're dropping your head. I'm going to ask this anyway. Way to go.
Press through, Glennon. The hero we need.
He is. Matter of fact, congratulations to John Glennon and his new venture at Broadway Sports. We're excited for him.
Absolutely.
On that as well.
Yep.
Obviously, Joe, Mike Vrabel is very tired of answering questions about Jadeveon Clowney. We've been talking about Clowney potentially coming to the Titans since literally April. When do you think this is going to resolve itself either one way or the other? Is there any sort of timeline you think that this is going to be completed by? Or are we still just totally up in the air and waiting for things to happen, either people getting hurt or guys like Vic Beasley not showing up? Like when do you think this is going to come to an end?
Well, I think Clowney, first of all, I don't think Clowney is like, man, I'm really desperate to get in one of these camps and do the tests and, you know, lift for a few weeks. Yeah. I really got to get in there.
He's probably just fine where he is.
I mean, I think Clowney's fine. Wait until the day before the season opener. Put me in. Okay. All right. Yeah, I know your defense. Let's go. So I think the whole idea with the Clowney camp is wait until someone can't live without you. Now, I don't know. You know, again, I have not seen reported numbers, and I have not been able to get any numbers on what is, I mean, it was reported back then, what, 20 million, right?
Right.
That was reported. That's the last, honestly, I haven't heard or seen anything on like what, like when Cleveland apparently gave him an offer, what was that? You know, the Jets, Raiders have been tied to him. You know, the Seahawks, obviously, there was talk that they were going to try to keep him. So I don't know what the number is, but clearly their number is viewed, I think, probably universally in the league as ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I don't, the timeline to me, there's plenty of time till this could get resolved. It's something like this with the Titans. You know, if Vic Beasley is an opt-out, does that intensify their pursuit, or does that convince John Robinson to move off, whatever their number is. I don't know, but I know that there's a case to be made, and I think has been made in this organization about rolling over cap money, about how Henry and Tannehill are going to have bigger cap numbers next year. We don't know where the cap's going. It's a floor of, what, $175 million?
Yeah.
But very, very possible it goes down. So, like, there's a case to be made to not do this. It's one of those things where – see, I think it was almost a luxury. I didn't really think it was a luxury pickup, but you could look at it like a luxury pickup this year. I still think it could have been the difference-making pickup. Now it may not be a luxury pickup. So what does that mean? It still means it might not happen because it just, maybe someone else out there has a big injury or a loss, an opt-out, whatever it is, and, and has the money and gives Clowney what he wants. But I think he's content just waiting it out until someone just can't live without him.
See, I kind of view it this way, and I was listening to Corey Curtis yesterday. He was on with Jared on Jared and the GM, and he was talking about the window the Titans have right now and how it's not going to be open very much longer. I mean, you've got, Derrick Henry signed a 4-year deal. If he gets 2 to 3 years out of that at a high level, I think you're pretty happy with that if you're the Titans. Tannehill's in his 30s. This defense right now without Clowney, I'm not sure you would put them in the elite category by any means whatsoever. That's why I think it's a necessity to go after Clowney. Now, you don't need to spend $20 million. I understand that completely. But I think this is the time, if you're the Titans, that you've been kind of building and waiting to get up to this point. I think Clowney's going to happen at some point with the Titans, and I think it needs to happen with the Titans. And all of a sudden, if it does, just think about what a difference he could have made in that AFC Championship game last year. Now, I'm not sure that he would have made enough difference to win because, Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City, they are unbelievable at what they do. But certainly, I think you like your odds better with somebody who can get to the quarterback, who can wreak havoc at the line of scrimmage, which is not really something that they have as currently constructed. So that's kind of the one piece we've been talking about on defense that they just don't have and haven't had. I understand that Clowney's sack totals are not there, at least haven't been there the last couple of years. It's not just about that, even though I do think that's a part of it. But I just look at the talent and just the freakish ability that guy has at times, and it's hard for me to believe he couldn't make a big difference here in Nashville.
No, I agree. I've been saying the same thing. It's like, I know in the NFL you have to, like as a GM, you have to have longer-term plans, and you have to try to think about, obviously you have to draft well. If you don't draft well, eventually you simply are not going to have a competitive team, a competitive enough team, but you have to look down the road some. John Robinson has some, Jayon Brown, we mentioned him, Jonnu Smith, he's got some players coming up with deals, and, he's got some veterans who may be moving on, maybe cutting bait as he did with Casey. And, you're trying to make it so that you feel like you can be competitive down the road. But, yeah, this looks like a window of something that could be special. Like, to me, you look at it like 2 years, you got Tannehill, you got Henry. You feel pretty good about 2 seasons of those guys being an awfully good combination. Hey, maybe Tannehill, like a lot of the NFL expects, was just on some kind of dream last year. I don't think so. By the way, Dan Pompey, my colleague at The Athletic, has an unbelievably awesome story on Tannehill at TheAthletic.com. I tweeted it out today. It's really, really good about his time in Miami and all he went through and his family and Kenny Stills. It's really good. But anyway, Tannehill, Henry, those two, that's to me your 2-year window of how special could this be. You have A.J. Brown. I mentioned Jonnu. The offensive line's in pretty good shape.
Yep.
Like, this offense, to me, is an offense worthy of playing in a Super Bowl. You got to give it enough support, special teams and defense. And I'm with you. If you can afford it and you may pay later for it, a lot of people have said you're going to pay for this Derrick Henry deal, even though I think it was a team-friendly, smart deal. You got to take some gambles, and I think Clowney is worthwhile, especially considering his best season was with Vrabel as DC. They have a relationship. I mean, his childhood friend was just signed by the Titans in the offseason. I don't know how much good football Jonathan Joseph has in him, but I know that he and Davion Clowney have been really close friends since they were kids in Rock Hill, South Carolina. I don't think that's a coincidence. So I think it will happen too. The Beasley thing could complicate things.
It absolutely could. Do we think like some random team like the Jets? Like people keep talking about the Jets maybe coming in and swooping up Clowney, offering him just an absurd amount of money, which in fairness would be a very New York Jets thing to do, just come in and just for no reason whatsoever say, you know what, we'll give you $18 million a year. Why not? Let's just do that because we have money to spend and we're not going to be any good, but we'll just spend it anyway. Do we think there's a chance that somebody just comes out of the blue and just signs him up, even a team we're not even thinking about right now?
Yeah. How many teams? That's the thing. Like a team like the Jets, to me, they would have to pay a huge number because I would just assume Clowney would rather be with a team that can win.
You would think so.
But hey, if you get to a certain number, then you could make the case to the Jets, hey, we're closer than you think. Sam Darnold, baby.
Le'Veon
Bell. Yeah, they paid him a lot too. So that could happen. But I still think that it's going to be a team that, that needs him and is close. And I think that's the teams he's looking at more. And that's a short list of teams that check all the boxes, including can afford him. Whatever that means,
right,
it's still going to be a big number. Even if it's way lower than that $20 million we heard in the spring, it's still going to be a big number. It's going to be eight digits.
Let's say he does go somewhere else. Are people like around here going to treat it as, comparing Vic Beasley's numbers to his numbers, just like everybody this year, if you're a Titans fan, you're going to look at what Tom Brady does in Tampa Bay and compare it with what Ryan Tannehill does here. I'm ready for those conversations. I know you are too.
Oh, yeah.
You're really looking forward to it.
Can't wait. Now, there's a lot of comparisons possible in this season. Well, that's the thing with Clowney is like I think Clowney, like Vic Beasley is not a player that, makes a huge impact if he's not getting sacks. Vic Beasley needs to get double-digit sacks.
Yes.
Right? Jadeveon Clowney can have like a six-sack year and be dominant. And that's where it's hard. And I understand people saying, well, you don't pay $20 million for that. And I get it. But it's basically like a monster nose tackle on the edge at times, But it does have – there is a ripple effect for the rest of the defense when he's out there healthy and playing like he can at his best.
When we come back, we are going to switch gears and talk hockey. It was back yesterday. Gosh, Joe, it did my soul so good to see some live hockey on television. I almost cried.
A rivalry, no less.
We're going to get into the Preds, that conversation next. We might also get into my encounter with the law yesterday. We'll talk about that as well. This is Morning Drive, live from the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Stop the podcast.
Stop the podcast.
Hi, everybody. Just to let you know, this episode of Fish is sponsored by TV licensing.
Yes, TV licensing. What are you watching on TV, Andy?
I have been watching a show that's called 2 Weeks in August.
Okay.
Despite it being July at the time of recording.
Oh, you don't have to watch TV shows in the time that their name references.
No, absolutely. I watched The Darling Buds of May in winter. Anyway, 2 Weeks in August. It's a really good series. It's set on a lovely Mediterranean holiday.
Ooh.
And it's a group of old mates from uni who've gathered together. Some of them have got kids. Some of them haven't. Some of them have been going through big life events. And it's one of those amazing pressure cooker series where things just get more and more and more tense.
Oh, those stressful ones.
I love it. I love it.
I love my comedy, I got to say. So I've been watching Android, which is Diane Morgan's new thing, and I absolutely love it. But I always on television watch everything with someone from Bolton in it. That's basically all I watch.
And she's from Bolton.
She's from Bolton.
But in this show, I believe she's a robot.
She's a robot, and it is not certain where in the country she's from.
It depends where the facility is that makes her, I suppose.
I guess so. But what are we actually here to say?
Oh, we're here to say that if you want to watch any of these shows, your TV license covers you to watch over 400 TV channels and everything on BBC iPlayer.
That is incredible.
So 2 Weeks in August has finished going out now, but you can get hold of it on the iPlayer.
If you want to find out more about this, then go to tvl.co.uk/pod.
Now back to the tension and the stress and the misery of this episode of Fish.
Oh, I thought you were referencing Bolton. On with the podcast.